It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Welcome back from vacation, Brad.
Thank you. I've been up in the mountains of Telluride, 13,000 feet elevation. It's
Colorado
pretty,
again.
The air is kind of thin up there.
You like going hanging out with your dad in Colorado, huh?
Yeah, kind of. It's probably one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. It's kind of like watching the Discovery Channel right now. Huh?
Hey, are you watching that? The
yeah,
Planet
we are.
Thing? Goodness
yeah.
Gracious. Sarah and I are watching it on our high-def TV, so...
We're not quite doing that, but we're enjoying it. The kids are going like, wow, that's amazing, Dad.
For those of you that haven't watched this stuff yet, it's this new high-def photography of all these natural wonders and animals and plants
it's,
and...
It's outrageous. It makes you kind of go like, God, you've done some pretty amazing things all over the planet. And that's all going on, and I didn't know because I was in my backyard and I didn't see it.
I didn't see that stuff either, but I'm watching it on TV. Sarah and I are watching it. Oh, my gosh, that is lovely. And we're thinking of all the lovely psalms about God's majesty in the creation. And we're just sitting in this worship mode watching it. And then I got to tell you, it turns dark. Animals eat other animals.
And or that happens.
And they kill each other. And they don't do it in nice ways. I mean, it's pretty vicious out there. It's horrible.
Well, it's a dog-eat-dog world, don't you think, sometimes?
Well, it's not only that, but it's the leopards eating the rams and the something eating something else and
whole
birds.
Bunch of lions jumping on the rear end of an elephant.
Man, that just killed me. You got 30 lions take down an elephant because they're so hungry, and it takes 30 to take it down, and they just keep biting him in the butt till he can't handle it anymore and collapses, and they just maul the thing. And that's not a pretty part of creation, I got to tell you. That,
not,
somehow,
not in high definition.
Somehow our worship gets interrupted at that point.
It does?
We're like, well, yeah, okay, so we're going, this must be the fall. So this is the beauty, wonder,
well, it kinda is,
stuff,
though,
and then the fall is...
It's not the lion and the lamb and the elephant lying down together.
Well, you're hoping someday the lion and the elephant and the lamb, someday soon, will come together.
Do you think God intended for that kind of behavior between his creations?
Well, I think we've got indication in Scripture that no, not so much.
No, uh-uh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, that is part of the present predicament.
Isn't that what life really is about? I mean, these wonderful moments of great beauty and wonder, like being in Telluride.
And then 30 lions take down your, take down your rear. It's
or
terrible.
Like we're down at Disneyland and we're watching we're down.
Oh, that's right. You went down to the happiest place on earth.
Well, I disagree with the concept, the pretext of the question, the comment, but, we had, the back part of our buying tickets to Disneyland was a California Adventure within 30 days,
oh,
go
that's
for free.
Right.
So we had to go for free.
The twofer.
So we get, and they got all this, you know, amusement stuff, which so it's pretty, not so much in there, actually.
Do you find amusement parks amusing?
Not anymore. I'm too old.
Don't you love the stroller races at the beginning as you go into the park?
There was an hour that was glorious. There was an hour of it.
You had a glorious hour.
Yeah, got there. Sarah and Julie and Amy went off to the Kitty Land, and I decided there's one big ride here, one big coaster. So I'm going
to
go down there and give
Screamer.
That puppy a ride. And the California Screamer, I had no idea what it was. I got in there, and they shoot you out of a cannon from 0 to 60 in about 30 feet. I knew when they said put your head back against the headrest 5-4-3, I knew we were in for a good one. It was great. So when I got off, and I waited an hour to get on it because it was broken down and all that. But anyway, I got on it finally. When I got off of it, Sarah, Julie, and Amy were there. So I said, let me have your ticket. So I put them through the Fast Pass machine so I could get 3 tickets to ride it later. And I thought Sarah would ride it with me, but in the end she couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Couldn't get on. So
Sarah didn't want to go screaming.
Nope. So I went 3 runs in a row. Where you don't.
Ooh.
No waiting in line. Jump on the thing. Go around. Get
You're
off.
You're a coaster junkie. You're a coaster junkie. Admit it.
I don't know about that, but this is. I've ridden a lot of coasters in my life. This is one of the best ones ever. It's fast. It's got the big loop in it. It's got ups and downs and weightless thing. And one of the rides, I was in the very back cart, which is flying over these hills because the bottom carts, it was, but then you get out of that and you get back on the freeways of LA and it's kind of like the elephant getting bit by the lion in the butt. So,
just a little slower.
It really is kind of like life. You know, life's just this incredible moments of wonder and beauty. And then you got 30 lions on your butt and that's just the way it is, I guess. It's kind of sad.
Unfortunately, yeah. You kind of have to take both sides of that coin.
Yeah, it's very sad. But glad it's over. Anyway, that part of it. So, you know, amusement parks are not that amusing to me anymore. Up by a long
But you went screaming on the California Screaming. That's good.
There's two rides in that park that was fun. That one and then the Soaring Over California. That was pretty cool.
It's pretty IMAX-y.
And Telluride, you guys what? Hiking and fishing or what were you doing?
Snow skiing, dude. That's
skiing?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's 80 degrees outside.
We left in a blizzard. It was 20-some degrees, and it was blowing snow, and there was a car that rolled itself right
when you
before
came home.
Yeah.
Coming
and
down. Wow.
And then about 8-9 hours later, we're in the deserts of going through Las Vegas, and it's 80 degrees, and we're just going, gosh, this is wild. So we were doing some of the discovery planet of our tour of ourselves, but we were in the snow skiing and having a blast.
Last time I hiked up a mountain trail, got chased out by a bear. Got to tell you.
For real?
For real, my gosh.
For real?
We were up high. You were 5 miles
California
from the
Screaming
car.
Wayne Screaming because the bear's got a California adventure for him.
No, that is the national animal or state animal or whatever it is. We've got a bear on our flag even. The grizzly. This one's not a grizzly. This is a black bear. But we were up one of the favorite lakes we like to hike to. It's 5 miles straight uphill. And we noticed when we left there's only one other car at the trailhead, and we passed them on the way up. So
you're by yourself.
We knew we were alone in the Kaiser Wilderness. We asked if you'd seen any bears or anything. He said, I saw some mountain lion prints, which, it's kind of unnerving. Don't like mountain lion. I'd rather even meet a bear than a mountain lion. But we got up there. I fished a bit. Sarah took a nap. When we left the lake to come home, the dogs were real skittish. We could hear noises behind us, and finally Sarah goes, there's a bear behind us. Look back, and about a quarter mile back is this big
chasing
old bear.
You?
Yeah, following us, not running after us or anything, but he was lumbering along the trail, and I'm going,
Wayne smells pretty nice.
Mr. and Mrs. Dinner. Sarah wanted to leash the dogs, but I said, no, gotta get them out there. They could distract the bear, give us another chance to run further down the trail.
Just might sacrifice one of those to keep the bear off your butt.
Gosh, it followed us for about 2 miles. I gotta tell you, it was a mile and
uphill,
a half,
downhill?
Mostly down. We're mostly headed down from the lake to the car. So.
Were you running?
5 mile hike, we covered it the fastest.
Fastest 5 mile hike Jacobs has ever gone.
Ever. We did have the pack that had, we had tuna sandwiches. We figured it was probably a good tuna smell in that pack. So if he got any closer, we're dropping the pack.
And hoping he went for it.
After that, I was going to trip Sarah and then. No, I'm kidding.
You're in trouble.
No, I'd sacrifice my life for that woman.
There you go. That's smart.
But she's funny. She's funny when we watch the nature stuff. When it gets to the bad stuff, she just covers her eyes. It's not in her world. It's hilarious. I don't see it. It's not happening. Tell me when it's over. And me, I'm just watching it going, God, really? Really? This is something. We gotta get this fixed. You really do.
So roller coasters, getting chased by a bear. Which one do you like better? You're probably doing the screamer on both, huh?
Well, getting chased by the bear is cheaper. The adrenaline rush
is
higher.
It's a twofer.
The adrenaline rush is higher. But all told, put me on a roller coaster any day.
You'd prefer a roller coaster than getting chased by a bear?
So I got a question for you, man.
Okay, lay it on me.
Are you and Kelly going to throw a purity ball for your daughter, Taylor?
You know, the thought really has never crossed my mind.
Really?
A purity ball.
Have you heard of them?
No.
Purity balls. Big stuff these days.
When you say purity balls, I go in a different direction, Wayne.
Well, I don't know where your mind is. I saw this on the Today Show.
What is
a
purity ball? The Today Show.
The Today Show, a big deal on this.
Full on secular.
Well, it started out among Christians, and it was kind of a way to help, particularly girls. I don't know why it started
like
in girls.
It's like a debutante coming out kind of thing?
It's a debutante coming out thing with a chastity pledge at the end of it. So I guess you could call a chastity ball a purity ball. But they're calling purity balls. And now it's kind of
gone.
I don't
think chastity balls would go quite as mainstream.
Yeah, probably not.
Purity
ball. I guess they're saying now it's gone pretty mainstream among even non-Christian folks are having purity
big
balls.
Big party. So. Big party.
Big formal party.
Big formal party.
Everybody dresses up. Dad's in a tux. Daughter's in a gown. Friends and family all there.
Celebrating
like
what?
Like a wedding. Like a wedding's
like a
reception
wedding.
Without the wedding. So it's a big party.
So there's no groom. There's no
big
wedding.
No. But no. Dad's the date for the daughter. And the big party coming out. Now she's entering woman. It's just 11, 12, and 13.
So it's like it's like an entering in womanhood kind of thing.
Sort of. Kind of. Yeah. So I'm celebrating that. But at the end. The young lady makes a vow of purity to remain abstinent from sex until married.
That's good.
And then gets a ring or a pendant of some kind to wear that symbolizes her commitment to, I guess, God, making a pledge to God that I'm going to not have sex till I get married. So a lot of people are doing it, thinking, you know, my 13, 12-year-old, I don't want them doing that stuff, so I'm going to get them in a little purity ball, and I'm going to make a little promise. I'm going to ring, and we've got it all nailed down till she's 22, 23, 24.
So how's that thing working out?
Well, that's kind of the downside.
You throw a purity ball, and what's the outcome?
Well, according to the latest surveys on this stuff, they're going now somehow 1 in 6 adolescents have now made some kind of chastity pledge or purity pledge of some kind.
And it's not just all purity balls, because they've done other things.
Some people just do it in their homes, or they do it in little ceremonies. Yeah, I've heard about this.
Josh McDowell had some ring thing going on for a while.
Out, yeah, when our kids were young, this was kind of in vogue, but we kind of went, you know what, gee, this sounds like
you didn't throw Julie a purity ball?
No. I didn't get her a purity ring, and, you know, look what happened. She got married. Anyway, here's the problem with it. Two different studies. One said of those who took the pledge in 1995, so going back to 1995, all those who took some kind of purity pledge.
12 years going on here.
12% made it to marriage without having sex. 12%. Admitted. Ooh. Now, you don't know how many people are not admitting it.
The ball didn't work.
And then there's another big study that those that have taken any kind of pledge of abstinence before marriage, 88% nationally of teens. That's pretty consistent. 12 made it, 88% don't make it. People who obviously grew up in families who care very deeply, who are trying to pass this value on to their children, 88% of the time it doesn't work.
No, because life is not about just one grand ceremonial commitment, is it?
Well, we have a lot of them, don't we?
We do. You know, you want to hold a revival, so let's hold a meeting.
We got those marriage balls.
So let's
no, we do marriage ceremonies, and
yeah, those don't 55%
of the time,
awesome
they're
either.
Not working either. No, exactly.
And it doesn't
right.
matter whether they're Christians or non-Christians.
Wow. In fact, it's worse, they say, now.
Well, that's tragic.
Divorce is
that's
higher
tragic.
In
quote, the Christian
the church.
Ugh.
Those that attend a Sunday morning event higher than those in the world.
It's pretty good marketing tool there.
Well,
so what's up with that?
Yeah, gee. I wish we had Dave here for this. Dave, the guy helped me write the Jake Coulson story.
Hey, Dave.
He's good at this stuff. But we're trying to get him back down here doing the podcast with us. But see, what he immediately would go to, which now I do because I spent enough time with Dave, that he's ruined my way of thinking.
He has. He's infected you.
See, I don't go, ooh, wow, we got 12%. It's worth doing for 12%. Because it really is actually, I think, only 65% in the culture have sex before marriage. So you're actually saying having a purity ball actually increases the odds that your child will not make it to marriage a virgin.
For real?
Yes. The statistics in the culture are less than statistics for those that have been through purity balls.
So a purity ball kind of sets you up for a fall.
Well, you know, and here's what, you know, I'm wondering if a purity ball, from a parent standpoint, is I want to do everything I can to keep my kid pure till marriage.
It's well-intentioned, but it's probably fear-based, huh?
I would say it's desperation-based, fear-based. We're going to throw a party. We're going to take an 11, 12-year-old, 13-year-old girl who has no idea of the temptations coming her way.
Hang on here.
As
a parent of young kids and very much aware of what's going on in the middle school and all that other stuff,
I hear
the things that hit high schoolers today are hitting middle schoolers now.
I fully understand that.
For real.
I agree with you. But so, I think at 11 and 12, you don't have the makeup to realize what are the consequences of things you're pledging.
No, I don't think, from your own decision-making standpoint, they haven't fully individuated. This is I am making my near adult decision. They're kind of like, I'm doing what dad and mom want me to do.
Yeah.
And this is a big party, and I better go along with it.
And I'm getting strokes for it. I mean, people are just coming up, oh, we're so happy, so sad. Getting great strokes for making a promise, which, unfortunately, in our culture, you do. You get big strokes for promises.
Talk is cheap, huh?
Well, it turns out, because the pressure then to conform to mom and dad's way of doing things, this is the deal. As they get older, if they do mess up, and 88% of them do, it says, here's Dave's thought on all this stuff. He's going to go right, not to the 12% who make it, because they probably would make it anyway. The 88% who made a pledge on a big day before God and mom and dad and got
big
this
deal.
Ring and jewelry to show for it. Now, what happens when she, and I don't know why we're picking on the she's here. This is for girls. We're not doing anything for the guys. The guys ought to be taken out to their own chastity balls and take care of them boys. That's another story.
Throwing a purity ball for a guy just sends you in the wrong direction.
It does, but you'd have to find a better name. But the guys are the problem here. It's not just the girls. The guys are a big part of this.
Yeah, there's kind of one of each typically in the fall.
The problem is with increasing our children's using a commitment to a rule to hopefully increase their odds of staying pure till marriage, which statistically shows you're actually increasing their odds of not making it. But it really underscores what Paul said about the law. Where law increases, sin increases all the more. I didn't even know what coveting was till he said, thou shalt not covet. I know we talked to our kids about sex when they were young kids. They weren't interested in it. They weren't going, oh, wow, that does sound fun. They were like, ew. I remember Andy going, do you guys still do that? Julie said, don't you hear him screaming in the bedroom at night? And I'm going, what? I don't know what that was about.
It's a roller coaster.
It didn't take the kids by. The kids are not going, oh, yeah, great stuff. But as they get older, as the
hormones there's an innocence that isn't oogling that.
Yeah, and what they're saying is even kids that have made these chastity commitments or purity commitments, they're going to try other kinds of sexual activity that are not technically going to be sex.
Right. Well, Bill Clinton kind of helped us out on that one.
When, yeah, let's go back to Bill.
I didn't have sex with that woman.
Oh, you got to go back there.
That was his.
Yeah. No.
I'm not making fun of the South. I'm making fun of Bill Clinton.
I'm just surprised you're going all the way back there. No, I wasn't picking on that part of it. I just think you got this 88% who made this big commitment, and if they falter in it, their guilt is multiplied.
It's compounded, yeah, because I made this big profession. It's not like Peter saying, well, I'll follow you anywhere.
He meant it.
He did mean it.
But
it's sort of like the whole thump in the chest doesn't necessarily make for the daily walking this thing out for a whole bunch of years.
Which is what Jesus said to the boys in the garden. I just reading through that recently, the tail end of Matthew, you know, your spirit is willing. Yeah, you really want to. I get what you want here.
And that's good.
But the flesh, the reality of pulling it out tonight isn't there. Your flesh is just not going to
Life doesn't work on the power of commitment. I mean,
come on. Now, that you're pulling a major.
I know, but
this is a major
sacred cow.
I know.
Get the cow over in the heart. The whole dynamic is. So many sermons and exhortations are like, you know what? We just need to dedicate and recommit ourselves to this thing. And so it's like, what we need is commitment. It's like, you know what? Kind of been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, got it ripped right off, and it doesn't work.
Because the harder you try to say no to something, the more that something is in your head and heart.
Like, simple illustration. Don't think of a green elephant.
Okay, I'm not.
It's yellow with purple spots. The way the human brain works is that in order to not do something, I've got to put that something in front of me and then focus on not doing it. It's like saying no. I mean, thanks, Nancy Reagan, for just say no to drugs. Saying no doesn't work.
No, and I heard one person say it hasn't said no since the two most innocent people got it from the world's highest authority. I love that line. No, it doesn't work.
Saying
exactly right.
Yes does. Saying no doesn't. It only works for so long before that bear gets you. You can go to the neatest lake on the planet Earth, but if you got a bear stomping you...
Or 30 lions tracking your butt. Which is a bigger problem to me than the bear.
At the end of the day, saying no to something is just got your brain focused on the wrong thing.
Yeah, constantly. I mean, every time you look at the ring, every time you look at the pendant, you're thinking, oh, I promised to say no to what? What did I say no to? Like Paul in junior Pharisee school when he gets the thou shalt not covet lesson. He's covet. What's coveting?
What could I covet? Oh, don't covet that.
You could covet your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's house. And he's going, house, wife. I don't know. What's my neighbor? Oh, a bigger house. Hot wife. I don't even have a wife. And all of a sudden he says, the law produced in me coveting of every kind. That's exactly the point. That's exactly why 88% of these teens who pledge themselves to purity don't make it because...
Well, it seems like the one crowd that is unable to talk frankly, honestly, and make it a normal part of life about sex is the Christian crowd.
Yeah, because just say no is our answer. Sex?
No. No, 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 no. Marriage? Only
well,
marriage.
Look,
wait till marriage.
What they do is they make something that God has designed that is absolutely wonderful and beautiful, and they basically
and
try to tell you to say no, dirty, bad. And it's like, you know what? I think most people recognize, no, it's not dirty. It's not bad. It can be, but that isn't what that thing is. So if that's the only way you're going to get someone to not, they kind of go like, well, it doesn't feel dirty, doesn't feel bad. I feel drawn to this. This must be different than what you're talking about. And if you don't put this in the right context where we understand that, look, this thing is powerful. It is wonderful. It can powerfully and wonderfully destroy you if it's not in the right context. But we don't really empower people with that kind of education.
So how do the Cummings talk about this? You guys have a monthly
lesson on sex?
This,
you know what? The thing is we talk about it in the naturalness of life if it comes up. Jared watching television. You know, it's like you get these little romantic comedies. We're laughing one time, and all of a sudden they start to kiss. Jared, my 12-year-old, he'll close his eyes and look away. And there's just the bashfulness of a 12-year-old that I'm kind of going like, you know, I don't make a big issue. I love the fact that right now there is that sense that, you know, he looks away. It's not as if there isn't there an attraction.
Right.
We're driving, and I'm going to get in trouble for this story, but this is hilarious. We're driving through Las Vegas itself, Sin City,
when?
All right? On the
two
way
days
back.
Ago.
2 days ago.
Oh,
we're hitting the desert.
You're in Vegas. You called me from Vegas.
I called you to ask you, you know, how much I should put down on number two.
Oh, gosh.
I never bet it, but we were.
And I told you a bunch.
You said let it ride till it blows up. We were meeting Kelly's brother
for dinner. A lot of things.
And we're driving through Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, and I don't know what hotel it was on, but I mean, I get that Jumbotron, like 10 stories high.
Oh,
my
gosh.
And you know what they got
on sports?
It?
Sports?
No, they
sports?
Weren't. No, no,
no.
Well, oldest profession in the world, I think. And they had a whole
Pole
bunch
dancing.
Of bikini-clad ladies with tassels as their only clothing. And here we're driving by. Kelly goes, "Oh!" And Jonathan's laughing, and Jared's looking at Jonathan, saying, "Jonathan, don't look at that." And Taylor's 5 and a half, and she goes, "Huh." And I'm just going like the tassels. We made it into something funny, where as opposed to going like, "Oh, Jonathan, don't look." It's like Jonathan is at 9 years old, and he's got no problem looking at the tassels swinging. And he's going like, wow,
swirling tassels.
And Kelly's rolling her eyes. I'm laughing. Taylor's going like, "What?" And Jared's trying to be good. He's trying to look away. And, you know, the nice thing is I'm not shaming him going, "Oh, you know, Jonathan, you're bad and Jared, you're good." There's something wonderful and innocent in Jared where he's kind of going like, you know what? There might be an attraction to it, but there's something in him that does desire purity. And it wasn't because we held some ceremony or some purity ball.
No purity balls?
Wow. But he's looking away. Jonathan's at an age where it's just kind of funny. I don't think there's anything sexual going on. He's like, "Swirling castles, that's great." The next billboard we drive by is nice, some Victoria's Secret bra thing, and Taylor goes, "Daddy, boobies." So we make it a point of laughter, a point of normalcy, because I think when you look at it from some different, it's all of a sudden, if I had some overreaction, I do think it would do something quirky to my kids.
The element of the forbidden really intensifies
it does.
Shame and temptation and allure and all that kind of stuff.
And as opposed to being able to, you know, dialogue about, I mean, because Jared and I have some conversations where it's like, you know what? We do talk about the whole dynamics of attraction and arousal. And it's like, that isn't evil and wrong. It's going to happen whether you like it or not.
Yep.
And it's how you go about responding to it and dealing with it, which is going to empower him to live a life that purity's awesome. I mean, what they're trying to accomplish through throwing their event, I want to celebrate with the sense of that's a great end in mind, but not as some fear-based, desperate event that's going to force and compound the problems.
Well, I wish they'd done this stat, because I bet 98% of parents who throw charity balls weren't virgins when they got married. As one who's done a lot of wedding ceremonies over the years, and in the honesty of dealing with young people, very few making it both of them virgins to the altar. I mean, it's rare in our culture, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone gets married glad they're not a virgin. I think everyone who does get married wishes this were their first partner and their only for life. And I think God gets that right. I'm not easy on people saying, you know what, sex is just too big a temptation. What are you going to do? You just go ahead and God will understand. I'm nuts about purity, sexual purity, saving yourself for one man, one woman for life is God's ideal. And it is the best. It is.
But it's not because it's some religious rule.
Exactly.
There's something of a relationship that makes that work
of a relational reality. Yes.
And it's like when you start to capture God's heart behind something, then it's not as challenging to embrace because you're like, oh, I get it. But that's not what we shove down most people's throats.
Because there's something about love, really, that is, I want you alone and you forever. I mean, that's what, and everybody thinks they find that at 14, 17, 18.
Found it again.
And, you know, and I think even the Christian community, the reason why marriage and divorce is so prevalent is because they're trying to stay pure until marriage, get married, make it legal, married the wrong person, or, you know, married in out of the wrong motives and the
married
wrong
out
reasons.
Married out of lust, not love most of the time.
Yeah, or married an abuser they didn't even know was an abuser, but married him, you know, 3 months of dating, got married, seemed like a nice
hot
guy.
Hot and heavy and want to make it legal and okay.
Turns out, you know, he's cheating on her and got other women on the side and he's a violent man. And so then that has to break up. And there's a lot of pain in all that. I mean, there's just tons of pain in all that. So I can understand parents that want kids to get there. But I think the bigger thing, I heard a man share this a month or two ago, and I loved what he said. We were talking about Jesus' life and, you know, saying yes to the cross, that big moment of not my will, but yours be done. I don't really want to go there. Can we do this another way? Not my will, but thine be done. And he chooses to do the Father's, and he says yes to the Father. And this man said this, for that yes to mean anything, Jesus had to say yes every day from the manger to Gethsemane. Every day he woke up,
see, that's not,
he had to
that's
say
not
yes
peace.
To
that's,
the Father.
That's not what we're told.
Isn't that a beautiful
We all go to the one little garden moment, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's the stress of sweat and blood, and it's, okay, nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And
yeah, he could have said it at 12 in the temple, got his little charity signet ring, and then, you know, made it till 33. I think it is a matter of saying yes every day. It's a matter of waking up in the Father, and there's something so much more glorious in him than all the stuff the world's throwing my way.
Okay, I've grown up in the church from like day one. I've never heard what you just said, champion. I've actually never heard it. I find that mind-boggling when you think of the fact that, you know what? The power of Jesus' life wasn't that in that one moment in the garden he made that choice. Thank God he did.
Yeah.
You know?
But he's not a perfect victim.
But if you don't, yeah, if you
he's
don't.
Not a perfect sacrifice. It doesn't work.
If you don't put it in the context of, you know what? But he did that day in, day out from his day one.
Yeah.
He didn't just do that then. He did that day in, day out. And he wasn't just saying no to sinful things. He was saying yes to his Father.
He was saying yes to something so much larger, something so much better, something that really makes life makes sense. But I think for most of us, the reason why I think that's true, why do we get the just say no rules? Why is that true from religious folks? And I think it's true because most folks caught up in religion haven't caught a relationship with Father worth dying for. Haven't found that. It, to them, it's a bunch of rules too, and they're trying to keep their life as clean as they can. Hopefully it's just good enough to keep their get out of hell card punched. But they haven't. We have not engaged people with a kingdom that is that pearl of great price, worth hunting down, trading all that you have to get that pearl. We haven't taught a relationship with Father that's worth saying yes to every day. Now, I don't do it perfectly. I'm not saying to say, gosh, my life's perfect. It's not. I have a great passion to grow more every day in learning to say yes to Father about not just yes in the morning when I wake up. That's easy. It's yes in the middle of the traffic I'm caught in on the freeway and the people I'd like to.
Or just when it all hits the fan and you're just going like, oh, I don't like. I mean, the last week or so, I don't know what's been going on in the whole big picture, but I do know that there's been a common thread of God just drawing me back to this, the request of God, give me an undivided heart. I mean, life gets so complex. There's a whole bunch of things I'm facing I don't know how to deal with. There's relationships that work. There's relationships that don't. And just going like, oh, God, what a mess. And it's pretty easy to get sucked down the drain of all that. I get consumed in it. I get overwhelmed. I mean, as we're driving back into L.A., and I've been in the glorious mountains for nine days, and it just loved it. Just was refreshed by the beauty.
Not thinking about work.
No,
not thinking about any of the responsibilities.
And as driving back into town, you're just going like, okay, I've been gone for 9 days. I have no idea what is, you know, the bear lurking behind my little pool here. And you're just going like, I got so much other stuff to go on. You're just going like, these bills, those, and you're just going like, the everyday cares and the worries of life, there. And I'm driving, and it's like you can just feel the tension start to rise. You just feel the anxiety, the worry, and I'm just going like, Lord, I don't like this.
I don't want to crawl back in this hole.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like, let's just turn around and drive back.
Let me tell you right.
And you're going like, Lord, what? And I just realized, you know what? In the complexity of all of it, there is a simple exit off that freeway. And it's like, you know, there was a little song when I was growing up. You know, turn your eyes upon Jesus. You know, it's like, they may think it's cheesy, but it's like, wow, there is a simplicity of a gaze that when I just put it back on Jesus, and somehow in that exchange, there's the simplicity and the purity of just, Lord, it's about you. You know, I mean, it all the other stuff of life, it doesn't go away, but there's a tractor beam of capturing my heart afresh. It somehow changes the atmosphere for me.
And this is a real place to crawl into there, isn't
it?
You're not just talking about some kind of head trip.
It's a
real place of crawling in and going, okay.
The whole way home, I'm driving on the 101. It's midnight, late at night. Everyone else is asleep. And I'm just singing a couple of songs that work for me in terms of just refocusing my heart, you know, being single-minded, wholehearted in terms of David's prayer out of Psalm 27. You know, one thing that I ask. One thing that I seek, that I might dwell in your house all the days of my life, to behold your beauty. And it's like, that works for me. And when I first read it, it was like, you know, ink on paper. But somehow that's become real for me, where it's like, Lord, I don't do life well when my gaze is distracted, and all of life wants to distract my gaze. You know, driving through, you know, Sin City, and there's the Jumbotron and the swirling tassels, and you just go like, God, give me a pure and undivided heart. Make life simple again for me. It's not going to be held in some event where I'm pressured to make a commitment I might not understand. Life isn't won in the, I made a commitment.
That's right. It's not.
It's in everyday simple little decisions, one step at a time. I mean, sometimes life gets reduced to that. I just got to make one step at a time.
And that's what's been a problem, I think, with even the sinner's prayer for coming to Jesus moment. You know, you make this big commitment at some moment, but it doesn't become a reality that you live out every day. And I noticed that when the early days of charismatic renewal, everybody had to speak in tongues. You got to speak in tongues. You don't speak in tongues. You're not even a believer. And then you got to get it. I got to get it. And all these people that spoke in tongues, and their lives were not transformed at all. They never learned to live
pressure
the fruits of the Spirit. Yeah. And I think even with our religious moments, we put more stock in ceremony and commitments and promises than we do the reality of just saying yes every day, every moment to God's unfolding work in my life. Jesus warned us that anxiety, Matthew 6, a great deal, anxieties, they're going to tear you out of this kingdom. The parable of the sower, the deceitfulness of wealth and the worries of this life. That's stuff that just
welcome
destroys
to everyday life.
Yeah, there's the 30
everyday
lines.
Everyday life.
There's the 30 lines letting down your butt every day. But there's a place to crawl into in Him where He says you put the kingdom first. And God knows all these other things. God knows your family needs to be provided for. God knows that all those things have to happen and things have to sort out. But when we attack those first and try to drag God along.
Oh, I can't take on 30 lines.
I can't
take on 30 lines. And that's why it's like, you know, just say no to lions. I can't. That doesn't work.
No.
Yeah, stop it, you nice kitty.
Well, Amy does that when she walks in our door now, because we got this huge German shepherd. It's bigger than her, Sheba. And Sheba just loves welcoming
Sheba
people.
Sheba bites my kids on the butt. That's why they don't come over as much.
That's another story. Anyway, she loves welcoming Amy into the house, but she's a little overwhelming for this 2.5-year-old unstable, still walker kind of kid. And so she comes in with her hands stretched out, her eyes open. She goes, no, Sheba. But she hasn't even seen what's behind it yet. And you're right, it doesn't work. You can't say no to a lion.
It doesn't work. And it's like when you go about just the normalness of life, it is fraught with challenges. I mean, it is all over the place. And I do think that it's like Jesus, when he was walking around in the Gospels, wasn't holding commitment ceremonies. Wouldn't say, hey, folks, just want you to make a decision for me. He went up to Matthew, tax collector, sitting at his table, got his riches all around him. And the thing, one of the most incredible miracles in my mind is he says to us, follow me. And the dude gets up and leaves everything. He's like, what happened? He didn't say yes to a commitment. He wasn't saying yes to a bunch of rules that are the right ones and no to a bunch of others. Like, he was captured by a person. And I think that's what's missing.
It's easy to understand James and John and Peter. They were lousy fishermen. They didn't have any future in fishing.
Leave the smell of fish.
Okay, I'm coming. They maybe need less of an incentive. But Matthew, Brad, some pretty good wealth. But
even James and John leaving the biggest catch of fish they've ever got, just left it on the beach.
It's probably the only catch of fish they've ever got.
That might be, but you'd not leave it. Most of us, let me sell this first and I'll be right there, Jesus. Most of us are snagged by so many other things. And one of the things that makes this life so amazing and supernatural is somehow when you get captured by the king himself. That's got to take place. When that doesn't, I don't know. I mean, trying to stay pure before marriage ain't going to happen because you hold a ceremony and make a commitment. I mean, God bless self-discipline, but it doesn't get you to the finish line.
No, it doesn't. And there's so many other ways we try this, I think, religiously. We hear what we should be doing. We make great pledges. We're going to do better. And then when you do actually better for 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, then you're a champion Pharisee,
then you
pride,
feel like,
thumping your chest.
But then when it falls apart, the guilt that's multiplied, because I did it for 2 or 3 weeks. I did it for a while. Now the guilt that multiplies, the sense of shame, the sense of withdrawal, the lack of honesty, all that happens when we start living in the dark. Instead of keep coming to the light. Yeah, learning to say yes to Jesus every day is this God journey. I don't know how to describe it any better. It is that. It is finding him so engaging. I keep knocking on that door. I keep looking in his face. I keep moving my life toward him because I want to be changed. I find places where I am saying no to him and doing stuff I wish I wasn't doing, and then turn around and say yes again and draw into that place and that prayer of give me an undivided heart.
And if it isn't rooted and grounded in an actual relationship, once a week attendance at a song service doesn't do it.
Come on.
I mean, we had one of the best things going, and people absolutely loved it. It was packed house. I mean, it was better than some of the nightclubs in L.A. And it's like I sat there and I went, what a farce, because it doesn't mean anything if you can do it in this great environment that we produce.
Yep.
And it was. It was a well-produced environment. And God was all over it.
It's easy to be happy in Disneyland.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There was nothing wrong with that. It's just that there was a complete disconnect. You're not about living this life in this nice, wonderful little air-conditioned, green hut. It's everyday life. And are we empowering people for that? Great to make a commitment. Everyone's dressed up. Mom and Dad are so proud of me. Everyone's going, oh, how wonderful. Susie's so chaste and pure, and this is great. And all of that is. But
on that day.
Yeah, but that isn't where that life is lived out.
No, and it doesn't work. The point is it doesn't work.
Yeah.
88% of the time it fails.
We got to empower people to recognize it's like this thing really is one day at a time, one step at a time, one decision at a time, not saying no to something, but saying yes to a someone.
Yes to someone so much better.
Yeah.
And it's waking into that reality every day. And saying yes, moment by moment, yes through the whole course of our lives, yes, Jesus, whatever you want to do in me today.
We had a little motto when I was, doing a little college pastor thing, and our little motto was yes, Lord. Two words that'll get you to the finish line. It's yes, Lord. And I don't think...
But that chorus goes overboard, doesn't it? Yes, Lord, yes, Lord, yes, yes, Lord,
but we
yes,
weren't
Lord,
saying
yes,
that
Lord,
song.
Yes, Lord,
I didn't like that song.
No, I hate that song.
but the reality is, I don't think in those days that I thought that was a catchy little motto. Like, you need to have a motto. Just like how goofy that is.
Yeah.
But the reality is there was a profundity in just those two simple dynamics. It's like, I'm saying yes to a person. That will carry me. You know, people say, oh, it's not that easy. You know, it's like, you're not checking out. It's not like going to La La Land. But there is a simplicity that it's like, you know what? I've realized I'm not adequate for the task in front of me. I'm not qualified for most of the things I'm trying to put my hand to.
Yep.
I'm pretty aware of my insufficiencies, and I'm actually, as opposed to being afraid of them, I'm happy about it. I do recognize when Paul says, I revel in weakness, because it's like, this life is not going to be won and learned and done on the power of my commitment.
Hmm.
It's like, you know what? It's the power of the one in whom I've put my trust. It is really, it's like, Jesus, I can't do this. You can. Please come do that in me. And that works. That life actually works.
I had one man describe conversion as the time you end the question of whether you're going to say yes or no to God. You say yes to God at conversion is that God now always gets a yes. The only question to God now is what? What do you have for me? What do you want me to do? That whether I'm going to do it or not is resolved at conversion. Would that it were. I'm not sure it is for all of us. I think that's a growing reality.
Well,
learning
the journey
to
might
say,
be a little nicer if it were.
It would be great if I woke up in the mornings and all my questions got, what do you want? Because I've already committed to doing that. And I'm finding more and more freedom to live that way about all kinds of stuff that crossed my desk. I'm going, is this you, not you? Because that's the only thing that matters to me now. It's not, ooh, do I want this? Or what, should I? Maybe not. It's always, are you in this? Because if you're in this, I'll follow you to the end of the earth. If you're
truth
not
and packaging
in it,
laws. Is it that simple all the time?
Yeah.
It is?
I think most of the time now it is for me. It is for me to look at stuff. It hasn't been most of my journey, I'll say that. But I think now I look at stuff and go, yeah, if you're in it, I'm going. Because there's things I'm doing right now that I've got to tell you, I wouldn't be in them if I didn't think he said yes. Because I never would have without him.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your comments or your questions by email or at our website, thegodjourney.com. Stop by today and join the conversation.